join us for a discussion of the Klingon Christmas Carol here at MarsCon 2019.
Introduce ourselves in relationship to the Klingon Christmas Carol. I'm Bill Hedrick. I'm one of the co-original translators of the Klingon Christmas Carol. I also make most of the, I also make all the prosthetic heads for the St. Paul production.
I'm Laura Hurston. I am also an original translator, and I have been in the show many years, and I was also in the last show that we did in at the Mounds Theater this past December.
And you're also the language coach.
And I am a language coach.
Yes. And I'm Mark Malikoff. I am the weapons master for the Chicago production for my Christmas Carol since 2012.
Wow. Okay. Now, the Klingon Christmas Carol started, was it
Close the Door Closed.
Okay? Yes, Close the Door Closed. I'm getting distracted. In 2006, Commedia Beauregard, which was a theater company devoted to translated works, decided they needed a, and they would translate things from French into English, or they would translate a painting into a play, you know, like, they decided they needed to do a fundraiser. So they're trying to talk about things and stuff. Hey, how about we do the Klingon, how about we do the Christmas Carol in Klingon? Everybody laughed, and suddenly thought, you know, that might be a good idea. So they went around looking for somebody to do the translation for them, and everybody else was smarter than Laura and I. So we sat down for how long was that?
We got involved starting the translation sometime in the summer of 2007.
Okay.
And we spent months poring over the script and the Klingon dictionary, going over everything and getting the translation. We did our first read through in, I think, sometime in October, and the play was only three quarters written, half translated. We had gotten the translation done up to the first Cratchit scene, and that's as far as the translation went. When we were doing the read-through, we didn't have any of the future scenes written yet. But yeah. I was so pumped when I got home. I hopped on the computer and punched out a bunch of Cratchit's dialogue and sent them to Chris Kidder, his name was Kidder at the moment. He's now married, and his name is Christopher Kidder Lustrom.
Yeah, and his companion at the time, Sasha Warren, who also had a big hand in the writing of it as well. And one of the problems we had translating it is there weren't words for certain. There weren't some words, like there was no word for uncle in Klingon at that time. So we did things like mother's brother, I think was the
son of a mother's brother.
Son of a mother's brother was the word for nephew. That was so rough.
But we pulled it off.
Yeah, and the first time we did it one show. You know, it's amazing. We built all the head pieces, rehearsed like crazy. We did one show.
We got a standing ovation to a sellout crowd.
Yeah.
And we weren't sure anyone was going to be interested enough to come. We were sitting in the wings, waiting to go on for the very first scene, and is there anybody out there? And this is professional theater. You don't look. If you can see a seat, whoever's in that seat can see you. Unprofessional, we could not look. So we were listening and straining our ears. We have people. Well, probably about six or seven, maybe. And when we got out there, I was like, the place was just packed. And it just pumped up the energy level immensely. You gotta have an audience. Audiences are wonderful things.
people started picking it up just as a language too. And I remember there's all kinds of Klingon sayings. And this was one that wasn't in the play, but during the rehearsal, the lead who was playing Scrooge was going home, and I said, "Bach Bahed, Judge." And he looked at me and he said, I don't want to die. Yeah, so you die with honor.
Yeah.
My introduction to language kind of was forced on me. When I had been making props for about a year, back in 2012, I get to the theater, because we used to come in costume and usher in Chicago. My crew would come down all weekend. And I'm very nervous, Chris Kerr comes running out from behind the stage. "Oh, good, you're here." I'm like, "What?" "You have to go in back and do the titles for the translations." And I looked at him and I said, "Hey, where's the girl?" She threw up all over the place and went home. It's all yours. And it was funny because I looked at him and I says, "But I don't really know Klingon." He says, "You've been around the show for how long?" He says, "You know it." And I actually managed to sit there in the dark, in costume like this, in a little cubicle that was hot as hell. Couldn't see anything because they were on the other side of the wall, but I could hear what was going on the stage, making sure I pressed the button on the computer so that the titles for the actors would change at the right moment. And I actually did it without screwing it up, so I did learn something. But that was how I got involved with the language. Then I started going to the KLI.
Now, the thing about the play is, if you don't know it, well, who here hasn't seen the play?
Oh, you missed something.
Yeah.
I don't even know what it is. I don't even know what we're doing here. But
well, the Klingon Christmas Carol is a retelling of Dickens' Christmas Carol. Well, it's a restoration of the original Klingon.
Yes.
Because everything that's in the original Klingon. It is also the only professionally performed play in the Klingon language that I personally know of. I don't know if you guys know of other acting, any performances of other things.
There is an opera called Ooh, but I don't know if it's produced. It was done at least once in Sweden, but that's about it.
They offered to come here.
Yeah. Okay. They wanted money. Ah, okay. The play is entirely in Klingon, and it tells the story of Skulja, which is the Klingon version of Scrooge. And to be a miser in Klingon society is, okay, that's not good, but it's not particularly evil, or not particularly frowned upon. Frowned upon and being coward. So Skulja has to. Restore his honor and throw off his cowardly ways. And it's entirely Klingon except for a Vulcan narrator who narrates it in English. And we have super titles over this, like opera. If you go to an opera and you don't speak Italian, they'll have super titles over the stage, and you could follow along, and you do that for the play. And that's what Mark had to do. He said, "Okay, you got to run the super titles." What?
Yeah. They say only a fool is not afraid. Well, I was afraid.
Yeah.
And I wasn't afraid of anything except that producer would kill me. Chris would kill me if I screwed up the super titles during the show.
It's always fun and rehearsal or when the actors skip a line. And the title immediately is
it actually is good training because remember I'm sitting in a dark room and I can't see anything, but I can hear the actor hear them speak.
Mm-hmm.
So I have to hear all the words and I can follow along and I was like, "Hey, this is pretty cool, I do get this."
Well,
that's when I got interested in.
Talk to us about your
records. That was something that came after on its own. I started going to the show when it first came in 2010. And lo and behold, I decided, you know what, I'm going to get back into fandom. I'm going to be a Klingon. And I started doing costumes and showing up at the theater because they encourage that sort of thing. And we would usher in a costume. And I started just hanging around. It kind of didn't, as Chris put it, didn't go away. I kept coming down every weekend during the show. Then I decided to start making my own weapons out of wood. And about 2012, their weapons master quit in Chicago. And Chris says, you know, you're always hanging around here. I have a job for you. How would you like to make bat ones? And I was like, would I? And so I started doing
that's
that.
That's funny, would I?
Yeah. Only person who ever got it, a single woman. Well, lo and behold, you know, my father-in-law, I'm really grateful for him. He was an engineer, mold maker, carpenter, you name it. He's in his 90s. He had a complete shop downstairs, but I didn't have a clue what the hell I was doing. He helped me figure out all the tools from using a drill press to a humongous belt sander that's about as big as half this table, and it's ancient, we still use, carving out battles. And it got to a point where I was making, 20 to 30, sometimes 40 batlets every time the show came out. So I would literally spend, a typical production is, they'll call me up as soon as they're starting to get the cast together. Literally my whole summer from June until almost August, I spent making weapons in my spare time.
Because they break them or because there's so many more productions?
I also provided the fandom to CAD and to other things now for cosplay. But what happened was, I learned along the way, because the first few batlets I made were made out of the wrong kind of plywood and they broke, which pissed me off, of course. There's nothing, to a designer, there's nothing that pisses you off more than an actor breaks something that he made for the show.
Yeah.
And I would take that personally. He's like, no, just find another thing. And then this other prop maker came up that was doing stuff for the stage in 2013. He says, hey, come here. That's the wrong plywood. Birch, oak, those are what you want. They won't break. They're harder to break. And lo and behold, they only broke one batlet in 2013, and then a new world came. And this is one of my favorite things. I don't know if I told you this story. Allie, Chris's wife, was in the show, and her batlet broke because someone tried to win the battle and hit it a certain way. So I show up with a brand new batlet. She turns around and looks at Chris. You know what? I'm leaving you for Mark. He brings me weapons. But from then on, it just kept getting better. Each group that I did got to the point of where we had really good quality. I am pretty proud of the fact that the last 3 years we haven't had anything break at all. Nothing.
Wow.
So that's pretty exciting. But there's a enjoyment I get out of making these things, and it's not about money or materials. I get a big kick out of seeing people enjoying my work, not just in the audience, but the actors actually enjoying my work or coming up after and saying, hey, you know, I really liked working with this stuff. This was cool. That's where the fun part is.
Hey, Mark, if I after this weekend of wonderful playing on this, if I decided I wanted a batlet, could I get one from you?
Yeah, you could. I brought some with.
Oh, you brought with?
Yes, I did.
Wow.
We had a bunch left over that we didn't use.
There you go, people. If you want a batlet, talk to the man. I'm looking out here, and we have a veteran of the production. Okay. How many Klingon Christmas carols have you done?
Five.
She started as a small child.
You're not hiding well enough. We see you.
Jillian Chan. She started as a small child, and she probably knows the script better than anybody else. Yay. Hi, Jillian.
Hi.
Speaking of the language.
Ah, yes. When I'm language coaching for the show, in the Minneapolis show, which has over the years streamlined it to the point where I can get a cast able to get going on it into classes. There was a couple of shows where I wasn't in it and wasn't able to be in rehearsals as much. Frickin' night shift, frickin'.
Yeah.
So in 2016 and 2017, all I could do was teach the language, get a night off, and I had to take time off of work to do that. And I had to take time off of work to be in last December's production as well. I burned every hour of sick time and vacation time I had just so I could do it. And I had a director who was willing to work with that. But in any case, for the language, the first class I would teach would be about a couple, 3 hours of pronunciation, teach the alphabet, how to read the Klingon words. I had handouts with the alphabet and all the suffixes and prefixes, and then I would go over and use samples from the script and make everybody pronounce it like 50 times. And I would make them talk, go through the hardest sounds over and over and over. And then I would take questions. And here's one that I would make everybody say, because I personally think it is the hardest line in the show. It's just two words long and it means when do you die? Jorge. So everybody to the other, say it with me. Jorge. And I am exaggerating the pronunciation right now, and I usually do that when I'm teaching the language, because as the actors go through the rehearsal process, they get more familiar with their lines and they start giving them readings, which is to say that they are finding out what the line means and stressing particular parts of it. The second part.
They're acting.
Yes, they're acting. And I tell them, when you're on stage, act as if those super titles aren't going to be there. Make them understand. And they've done a good job of that. The second class is, their homework from the first class is to pick a line from the show that they have, and they will write it on a chalkboard or a whiteboard or whatever we have handy, and I will break down that line. I will tell them how to find the root, go over the prefixes, the suffixes, and then match it up with the actual line from the play. And not all of them will match 100%, because when you translate something from one language to the next, it's not going to be a perfect one-to-one match. So this teaches everybody how to look at the script, the English and the Klingon side, and be able to read their lines, be able to, here's this big, huge, honking word. What do I do? And I would like to be able to sit down with everybody on a one-to-one and just drill their lines for them, but, you know, who has time for that? They don't, I don't. And so this is the next best thing. Break down the line, explain how to do this on their own so that they can go through the script on their own and find things. I also tell them that don't worry about where to put the stress. You're an actor. That's going to be completely 100% up to you. So find what you think is the most important part to stress, and that's what you're going to stress. Give them readings, and then in that way, the people out in the audience will do more watching you and less reading.
I think it's also interesting, you know, and this is pretty universally happens, that you start thinking it. And, you know, you'll wake up in the middle of the night and you'll have lines running through your head. You'll have words running through your head. And it takes months to decompress sometimes. I know Lana, who played Scrooge for 2 years, and that is basically Scrooge. I don't think there's any scene that she's not in.
Oh, no, it's Scrooge is in every single scene.
So, it's a very small and august body of people who have actually died. And she is the only woman. And that's an interesting thing, too, because the thing about Klingon is it is the least gendered language. You have to work hard to make specify gender. So, and
it's all relationship words. Anything that has a gender in Klingon is relationship words. Like Shosh is mother, Vav is father. But to say a warrior is a warrior. And the pronoun Rach is he or she, depending on context. English kind of has the singular they, which has been around since the time of Shakespeare. It's on Shakespeare's plays as a singular. When you mention
Yeah. So, and then there, I think it speaks to the nature of Klingon society is that other than reproduction, there really is no specific difference between male and female in the Klingon culture. Size, maybe, that's about it. But you know, and there's, and it's a wonderful model to observe and to you know, to mine from for your own culture. That's getting a little far afield from Klingon Christmas Carol.
It's funny because we shared the same experience when I was working retail for Walgreens manager at the time, and here I was doing all this work for the show. All of my PTO time in December, which is the busiest time of the year, went into the show. So in November I'd be at rehearsals every weekend because as the prop master, they wanted somebody there to see how each thing was being used in conjunction with the language and how each scene felt together, which was kind of a fun experience as I learned how to design better stuff. But it was interesting because I had that same exact experience my boss had to put up with me not being in the store. Then in exchange, the cast came out and did Toys for Tots for our store. Was a couple times.
Oh, nice.
So we did a couple charity events in the store that were really successful. But during that whole time, every weekend, one day a week or during the weekend on Saturday, I was gone. And I had that same similar experience. I had to go and sit and basically watch how each piece was used. And then if I had to make changes, I'd have to go back and take notes, take photos, whatever, and then change it. Which was actually a great experience. If you ever sat in a production and watched it come together, it's kind of a really cool thing to see all these people come together and see how it all falls into place.
You know, the first couple rehearsals, you just kind of sit back there and say, oh my God, this isn't going to work.
And from the language perspective, you had that, I had actors picking up blades like this.
Oh,
and that was why I was brought in, because as a fan of weapons, I knew how they were used, so I had to tell them, no, that's not how you hold a bat with. Don't do that. You'll cut your fingers off. So we had this whole thing, and not only that, the fans in the audience are going to point that out. So those are little things that we had to worry about.
Oh, yeah. Our fight choreographer was very adamant about pick up the weapons the correct way. Here's how you hold it.
Yeah, so they have me looking over our fight choreographer's shoulder as a fan, saying, nope, that's not canon, nope, that's not right, nope, that wouldn't happen. And he kind of didn't like me at first when I was doing it, but toward the end he was like, you know, I'm glad you were there. Because there were so many little things with newer actors who didn't know how to pick up a bat. And some of it was kind of comical. Literally somebody picked the battle clip on the inside of it like this, right? Nope.
That's a razor. Yeah, it's kind of like my...
Your finger. Those things that are on the ground there, those are your fingers.
So, it's like my martial arts teacher said, even though we're practicing with a wooden pencil, it's a razor-sharp sword. You have to treat it like it's razor-sharp. You can't play with it like a piece of wood.
Because eventually you will be using a real razor-sharp sword.
Yes.
And there's little cultural things that I had to do with two productions ago. Young Scrooge walks into the room, puts his Macbeth on the floor, and puts his foot on top of it. Now, this was a child that he didn't know any better. So after the rehearsal, I'm like, Klingon wouldn't disrespect a weapon like that. Even a child, he would be taught better. That scene got changed rather quickly. But it's the little nuances and the little things that are part of the culture that all tie it together.
There's a thing in Gaelic culture that a friend of mine who I've lost contact with, Jerry Johnson, he had a son. And when his son was sitting there in the hospital with his mom, put a knife in his hand because it was a warrior culture thing. And, you know, I think it was probably the same thing with Klingons. Klingons, you know, learned. You know, it used to be in America, you played baseball when you were 4 years old. And Klingons, you're swinging weapons from that age.
And unlike baseball, the girls swing the weapons too.
Yes. Do we want to read a scene? I've got a scene.
Oh, you have a scene.
Yes, this is Scrooge and Cratchit scene.
do it.
You read scripture.
Okay. Tad yerok vai da oi mochpa yevumcha.
Loch, screw that. And bread comes in. Oh, okay.
You get to be bread.
You get to be bread. Okay, I didn't realize that.
Look, man.
Where's bread? Right there.
Kukash ram tai. Yerinet tamedun, bomedun.
Baka.
Jach baka. Beheshbe.
Dehetch, kat be put, chin hoblidge.
Kat be bet, by hoblidge.
Dehetch,
then we have not reduced this
part. And we're reading on a small phone.
It's true, you want. Dach judge, melo. Gumu, ram van hobman hu. Bingak bomedun, debom ed hoch vijat, dishvam kadak bach, tuk majvat, shuv, yimekhi.
Oh, this is English here, so let's get past the English, get back to the playing. Kint
kadjapu kadme lao vikapta.
Kid took a poop, a cold ledge, was led to the left, been to which, been at neck.
Call, cool your club, poop much vad your shoe.
He told you.
Court, happy shoe, right, elk, the coop, edge, the cat, chalk, your neck, no. Kakla, mekushish, kakpak, nuk shove, ed tog, wat nesh kwat.
Nuk chopong a nader bekom takvish, kakhoch kan.
Khat bilaj.
Khatit, khurdak kochvan, yechoshmoch. Juchdaj da shuwe pan ka et nil a.
Red. Daki mech.
Jimech bech. Udij dach chok et ju up et vitu.
And red exits. And Kratzik comes by. Dochach chadach chok bech. Pag chaler vinech. Dishbam. Tok wij vade de shuvka.
Kashon be bej, wat lesh nadev yevum.
Pin, tok ko och, kovli, kovwij vo, kovwij wov, kok lodwe kov.
Ut bet bel, nadev och, kutlij ek.
We can stop there.
Let's read the English.
Let's go back and read the English.
What you have just listened to. But that's what it sounds like on the stage, except much smoother because we were just kind of reading this whole.
Yes.
But that is what the language basically sounds like. And we have a question over there from Chandra.
It's not a question, it's more of a, I have someone over here who's not using any device and was doing all of the lines under her breath.
Way to go, Jillian.
Like I said, Jillian knows every line to this play. She's smarter than all of us.
Alrighty then. In that case, we're going to take it from the English and go through, and you're going to notice that there's going to be some cultural bits to pay attention to, because this is, after all, Klingon. What this is going to have to start with is Cratchit sharpening a knife right now. Put that down before you hurt someone. Get back to work.
Affirm, Scrooge. Scooter. Then crap, and then bread comes in.
What do you want?
It is the feast of the long night, Uncle. Great deeds, great songs.
Bah, humbug.
Humbug to the feast of the long night? You cannot mean that.
I do. Why be happy? Your hand is empty.
Why suffer? Your hand is full.
Humbug.
If you are sad, act. This is a time to celebrate. Join us tonight in singing the songs of the great deeds before the naked stars and for the tournament. I have already told everyone that my uncle will represent our line of honor this year.
Okay, scroll to the English.
I have already proven myself many times, as I have told you before.
You have told me many times, but I only wish I could witness your glory with my own eyes.
No, it is time for you to get your glory. You must represent the line.
Even the best blade will rust and grow dull unless it is cared for, Uncle. Your past glories must be so far in the past because no one I have talked to can remember them. Tomorrow's tournament will show you are not the coward you are rumored to be.
You call me a coward. I should kill you where you stand.
I accept that challenge.
Cratchit, show this fool out. He dares to challenge an old warrior in his own home.
You must leave now, Fred.
I go. I hope you will change your mind and join us.
It's unfortunate you won't be at the tournament. I would like to see you there. I'll be representing my line this year.
I have not given you the day off. You will be here working.
Boss, it's a family duty. My son's honor depends on mine.
Pleasure is non-essential.
Oops, I lost the screen.
And that's good enough.
Yeah.
That is basically about where we cut it anyway.
Yeah, that's where we cut it.
But in any case, that is bits and pieces. That is the first scene.
Questions? Anybody have questions here?
Any requests?
So maybe you already said this, or maybe this isn't anything to do with this, but how did you get into being Klingon?
I like languages. I like languages a lot. I saw the Klingon dictionary in the bookstore and I bought it and I took it home and started reading it and was teaching myself, and all the words led me.
What other languages do you speak?
A little bit of Spanish. I took 4 years of Spanish and went to Spain for a couple of weeks through school. I took a year of German. I taught myself Russian, and I started to learn Arabic. I'm not very good at Arabic. I can kind of read it. And that's pretty, I think that's it.
I think that's five more than
and
I have.
Klingon, of course. And then, of course, Klingon.
I started watching Star Trek in 1966. But I didn't feel better. I was too young.
I was born in 67.
I was born in 66, so.
Yeah, I got online in 1987, before some of you were born. One of the first things I ran into was Star Trek groups. And of course Star Trek got the Klingon language, the Klingon assault group started in 89. So I got interested in that. Somebody dragged me into it. The warrior culture, I got into it in 93, and went from there. And as I mentioned to the gang in our assembly, the Rachel Strip, our ship, our fan club started in 94.
93?
We got started in 93. It was officially recognized as a ship in.
Oh, no, 94. Scum of the Fleet since 94. Okay,
yeah, that's right.
Okay.
And April Fool's Day, 94, we became a ship of pay.
That's actually a very apt date.
Yeah. I got into Star Trek, I always watched as a kid, but I got really into it in the early 90s, I want to say around 91, the 25th anniversary, and just took off from there. And after a while, joining some of the various Starfleet clubs, I got tired of wearing children's uniforms, and back in 2010 I joined the Klingon Assault Group and been doing Klingon things ever since.
Okay.
That's a lot more fun, because essentially we're the intergalactic badasses of Star Trek.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of fun. And when I get into this often, I'm somebody else, people don't recognize me. I like that part. It comes in handy. It can be a problem. I was going to rehearsals for Klingon Christmas Carol. A couple times they wouldn't let me in. The actors wouldn't open the door to the rehearsal place. And so finally Chris showed them a picture of me dressed like this. And they're like, oh, that's him? Really? We didn't know that. It was actually funny. There was a couple times they would not let me in the door because they didn't know it was me. They were so used to seeing me in costume at the theater, they didn't realize it was me. That was funny. Cool.
For me, nobody can miss the hair. This actually grows out of my skull.
It's a good place, for you to grow out of.
Yeah, it is.
Yes.
Great. Do we have time for a song?
Oh, I think. Do you know the song?
Which one?
Poikilos. Pretty much.
All right.
Except for the ending.
Yes. Except for the ending. Everybody knows the ending.
All right. Feel free to join in if you know the song.
Jeremy Collins, as you know, is the language coach from Chicago.
Yeah.
He didn't come with us that time.
Oh.
So it was me, Troy, and a few other people. And we went through. We actually won first prize in this costume contest. We got up costume sang. Then Troy looked over at me and said, when Jeremy sees the video of this, he's going to kill us. Because we murdered the end of the song.
Sure. Yeah. It's actually from the show.
Soldiers of the Empire.
Soldiers of the Empire.
And the character who starts it off, it's exactly like the same scene in Hunt for Red October where the guy is down in the engine room, starts pounding on something, and they start singing the national anthem. And the Klingons are doing the same thing for the same reason. They're starting off on a journey, and it's a nice little homage to Hunt for Red October.
And they did that one time also, I remember, in the game Star Trek Klingon.
Yes.
They brought that in there. The interesting thing is the pronunciation of some of the words was wrong.
In the game?
Yeah.
The farther back you go in time for the Star Trek series, the more fluid the pronunciation gets, because as time passes and people get better at pronouncing the difficult sounds, the actors are getting better at pronouncing things, and the language. Well, for Discovery, they are really spot on with the language if they can talk around those horrible moments.
They have the best language coach for the show that I've ever met, Robin Stewart.
Robin Stewart, yes.
There's even the times when she's interacting with her with me, no question. There was a couple of ones I couldn't catch on the show. And so she was like, okay, go back and repronounce it this way. And it's interesting because they're talking through prosthetic teeth. They're going a little slower.
Oh, yeah.
But it's very clear.
Yeah. In fact, first episode of Discovery, T'Kuvma is speaking so freaking slowly that it almost sounds like a language instruction manual on audio because it's that slow. But it is clear. I can understand everything he says, but it's so slow.
You know, one of our proud moments was during the rehearsal playing at Christmas Carol. The stage man says, I can't find my phone. And Lana and Greg, who were very good with the language, translated that into Klingon.
cleaned it up a little bit, and I posted it, and Robin gave me a like. The language, so I'm going, yeah, Robin Stewart says you're doing good, then you're doing good.
Well, the interesting thing is the language is now growing. There's so much to it.
Yes. Well, every year, where is that cut?
Indianapolis.
Indianapolis. They have the big language lab, and they have a list of words they want. And Mark O'Brien consults Maltz, who gave all the... You know, Maltz is the... if you remember Star Trek 3?
Yeah.
Yeah. There's a John Larroquette character who is captured. And in the conceit, that he's the one we're getting all the words from. Maltz, you know, people ask, you know, giving all the Klingon words, so he's the source for the Klingon dictionary, not Mark O'Brien, who gives all the words.
You know. One of the fun things about the language is a lot of words in there, too, that have a hilarious meaning. So just put in there as a joke, and my favorite is tribbles.
Yeah.
Yes, that's a good one. Also, for the third year we did the show, that Mark O'Brien gave us words for uncle. Your neck is uncle. Your neck backwards is Henry. And on the KLI website, Klingon Language Institute, KLI.org, they have a list of words. And if you look up aunt, the counterpart to that uncle, it's etma, name.
And he has a word in there for when you put somebody in a headlock and you rub your fingers across their forehead. Milk and tea.
And there are even words like for various body parts. You are sitting on a shakhut. That's your butt. Because everybody needs to know what a butt is in Klingon. Somebody asked me that for the first day of rehearsal as we were walking through the show. And, hey, Laura, how do you say butt? Aj? No. The other butt. Oh, shakhut. And I can't believe you knew that off the top of your head.
That's the other favorite of mine is about a chair, is kush.
I think the word for boot, I think is... Dash?
Yeah,
dash boot. Yeah, dash, as in dash boot.
And the word for doctor is hack.
Yeah, I have in the pharmacy where I work what aspirin is, for medicine for cowards.
Oh, fine.
There's a sign in Klingon in the pharmacy, in the bay where the pharmacist works. We put that up there as a joke. And every time some new pharmacist says, what's that? That's Klingon for aspirin, medicine for you cowards.
Well, somebody up in the con suite earlier today asked me how to say I am a jelly donut. They wanted to know the word for jelly donut. And so I was thinking, well, let's see. I don't think it is in the KLI list. I'm pretty sure it's not. But if you remember back to JFK in Germany, making a speech, he says, I am a jelly donut, which has been ein Berliner. Yeah. Now, he thought he was saying he was a Berliner, a person from Berlin. Yeah. So if you take the word, the suffix non, which means inhabitant of, and you can plop that onto almost anything, Tarakngan is a Terran, Romulushngan is a Romulan, so a Berliner is Berlingon, which is jelly donut. So I kind of came up with that this morning on the fly. Mark O'Brien may or may not agree with me, and Maltz may tell him something different. But if you want to say that you're from Berlin, Berlingon is how you would say that.
I have an app on my phone called Bokhwi, and it does not have. Yeah, and there is no word for donut.
I didn't think there was, but since
there's no word for cake.
No, but we did get some interesting words over the last couple of years that I used and got trouble for using because they describe bodily functions.
Oh.
Awesome. And they are consulting their pads.
Yes. Wonderful story I did of, trying to think of the guy's name, but everybody makes fun of him.
On the show?
No, at KLI.
Oh.
He's one of the translators. Everyone tells stories about his grandfather all the time. So I had done this wonderful story about my cat peeing in the captain's chair. We also have cat. Which is even better.
Cat.
When we went, to the Kappa, which was here, all those words, all the new language, we put in lots of fun with those words. Much to the chagrin of our corporate who sorry he gave them to us.
Well, everybody needs those words.
Well, like you said, you both of you, some of the things in languages, even though I wasn't speaking much of them in the show, I had lines running through my head as they related to props and things. Mm-hmm. And I would be at work. And, you work for a drugstore chain, you get in trouble and you swear. I'd be in the cooler, something would break, and you'd hear a whole bunch of swear words in Klingon. And my boss would be like, oh, Mark's here today. That would go on all the time. And then I got to be a habit where I started doing things in Klingon. Then all of a sudden, I'm writing things out, sentences and things. Then all of a sudden, there were all these signs all over the store for the holidays in Klingon. My name tag is in Klingon. It really throws people off.
There's a whiteboard not far from my cubicle, and while I was in the 2014 show, every day I would come in at my usual, and I would write a Klingon phrase of the day, and it would be something really silly, like, the data is required immediately in response to the case managers. We need this now! Escalate! And give us ridiculously unreasonable deadlines. So I would write snide comments in Klingon and label it Klingon phrase of the day. And some of the people would look at that and go, oh good, that's cool. What's that? So I put the English underneath it. And I kept this up for about a year, and then they took the whiteboard away. They moved my cubicle to the other side of the building.
I think they were telling you something.
See, it's different with me. I've got signs of Klingon all over my locker. In fact, on the bottom of every name tag that I have, they usually put your years of service or some stupid slogan. My name tag says Mark, Supervisor, Bijay, Bichug, Vaj, Behag, Buy or Die. So some regional vice president walked in and said, would you speak another language? I go, yeah, that's Klingon. It means Buy or Die. And he looked for me and said, I like that.
I have a lot of geeks where I work, and my cubicle wall, we were doing a Christmas decorating your cube contest, so I decorated my cube as the Klingon Christmas cube, so I took pictures from previous productions, and I posted them all over, and I made this great big trefoil in the front, and I had all these Klingon slogans. And I even brought in a standee of the Duras sisters and made paper Santa hats for them. And the president of the company walked through judging, and he really liked it. It didn't win, but he really liked it. He was also a big Legos nut. Somebody made a Lego Christmas display that actually moved. So, of course, that one won because he was such a Lego nut.
When I was talking about earlier, I finally found the picture. It's hard to see. One of the things that gets me excited is when I'm sitting in the audience as a designer, and I see all the things that I have made in the hands of the actors, and how good they look under the light. That's what's fun.
Oh, yeah. And I love, for me as a prosthetic maker, at our panels, well, in the room here right now, there are five people in Ridges. I made four of them. so I'm sure pretty good.
That's the other side benefit. If you're a cosplayer and you work on the show, you learn how to do this.
Yeah, the makeup, yes. I took this off, and I was so bummed. I got here, I have a really nice set of foam latex lidges, and a very expensive gray wig. They're sitting in a box by my desk.
Oh.
Luckily, I had a backup set of lidges, so. But, yeah, I was like, oh, damn. Any more questions? Any part of the language or anything? Or the show?
Is that your real hair?
No. I'm actually bald. Yes. Well,
but see that again, that's the fun part of this. I can do this, no one knows me. And I can literally, you know, I dress like this a lot for show, obviously, when I do things in film, but for other activities that our group does in Chicago. It's funny, when I go to work like this for our Christmas toy drive, a lot of the people who know me in the company come in to work, Mark. They don't know it's me until somebody points out. It's hilarious. So I get to be somebody else. That's fun.
Yeah, you know, during the run of Next Generation, Michael Gorman walked down the street and no one would know who he was. Because he, of course, did not look like Worf. He doesn't actually sound like Worf either. Worf has a much deeper voice than Michael Gorman.
What do we have for time?
What do we have for time? We can get you out of here because it's 9:55.
Hey, we got 5 minutes to spare. Any last minute, 5 minute thing, questions, anything, comments?
Okay.
Accolades of throwing money? No, I don't do that.
This panel is over.
Thank you.
Document.